Today on ABCDTOS, Journey to Babel.
Hey everybody, welcome back to ABCDTOS. It's the only show that we know of that goes alphabetically through Star Trek, the original series. All of it. Every episode, but in alphabetical order. I'm Pete the Retailer.
I am Tom Taylor.
I am John Ingle.
And I am Joe Mazel.
And today, we are talking about Journey to Babel, which, every once in a while, you might catch me saying Journey to Babel.
Because you're pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, well,
I don't know.
In this case, it's Babel is the name of the planet, so it's I'm not, you know, whatever it's referring to might be.
Wait, is it? I thought it was the nick. I thought it was the code name of the planet. They were. Don't they specifically say code named Babel?
They do.
So that means it could be open to interpretation.
Oh yeah,
you think
look
it's
at that.
An in joke that in this episode McCoy is consistently mispronouncing things that were just said to him.
Yeah,
like
he does
that.
Yeah.
Like Mrs. Surik or something.
And you keep saying like Surik, Selik, which Selik is a real Vulcan character that we'll talk about one day.
That's right.
On our Patreon episode.
The star of Space Magnum P.I., right?
That's right.
It was.
Pew, pew.
From what I understand, Tom, he was originally going to be Indiana Jones.
Yeah, Space Indiana Jones, which is Han Solo. That's... Yeah.
Here's the Google blurb for Journey to Babel. Let's start at the top here. While transporting delegates to an important conference, Mr. Spock puts duty before family when his father requires emergency medical treatment.
Duty. Sorry.
Put duty before family.
Gross.
Sometimes you have to. I mean, when you gotta.
Yeah.
Especially before your family.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm always the first in. Everybody else has to wait.
Here is from all right. So it's season 2, episode 10. If you're in viewing order, season 2, episode 15 in production order. Originally aired November 17th, 1967. And this is kind of a I don't know. By the numbers, indicates kind of a bad thing, but it's prime Star Trek because it's a DC Fontana script directed by Joseph Pevney, and that's your core right there.
Now wait, did we not just have that recently with Friday's Child?
Mm-hmm. Which was
and that
not,
was but
that was not
so this one probably sucks.
Well, and also for our purposes, we should note that this is the second episode in a row to feature the formal dress wear.
Mm. Oh.
They're formal outfits. We had, as they were in Truth No Beauty. We're dealing with a lot of ambassadors here. So,
yeah.
I love how much weight Bones carries in the cold open from the point, you know, like we open with Bones complaining about the dress, and then we get like such a long expositional diatribe that he almost took a deep breath before he started. He's like, well, it'll be nice when we can finally get these. You know, he says everything we need to know in one walk and talk, with an unbroken walk and talk.
And that last line of that
joins,
I could not understand. Like I had to go back and turn on the touchier than a raw antimatter pile over this Coridian or Coridan question. I could not understand what he was saying.
Yeah,
I
because
had
to think. He was running out of breath.
He was and it was it. And it was at the end of like a long busy tracking shot with the I probably used tracking wrong. But following him down the hallway and everything and stuff, and they're probably like, do we do it again? I don't feel like it. That was busy and that was a lot of work. Which is good enough.
It was, in fact, a tracking shot, Tom, just for clarity. Yes.
It is kind of a Undercover Bones episode.
Yeah.
I think it's a Spock episode, but really, like, Bones does a lot of the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Shines.
Well, it's a good, it's got a little bit from everybody. It's got the parts are all functioning.
While we're on that subject, Kirk apparently was brought into the episode late. Basically, it was, wait, Kirk doesn't really have anything to do. That was another one of those. Mm-hmm. So Roddenberry rewrote the script enough to at least wrote the scene between him and Amanda to bring Kirk into the story a little bit more, other than being like a, hey, you want to like get a tour from Spock? Oh, you don't like Spock? And that was like about the extent of his, other than doing basic captain stuff.
That is surprising to hear, because it doesn't, none of the Kirk stuff sticks out like a sore thumb the way some Roddenberry editions sometimes do.
Well, not while the, once the action kicks in, he's the captain. But as as the core story, the A story, which is the Spock, you know, business, he wanted to give him some information about it. So he let Amanda, DC Fontana disagreed with the decision, saying that she would not do that. Mm. Like, that would not be, a Vulcan wife would not like say all this stuff to somebody she just met today.
It is. But, yeah. The one thing that's interesting that does sort of stick out is that in that conversation with Kirk, she says, oh, the Vulcan logical way is a better way than ours. Mm-hmm. And everything else she does in the rest of the episode is like, it's sends that right out the window.
Way. Yeah.
Right. She even says at some point, like, I'm sick of your Vulcan ways or something like that. And it's like, well,
that's
logic.
The Vulcan way. I want no part of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, they say at the beginning of a character's arc, they should believe one thing. And when they get to the end, they should believe another. So she's holding on to this. She's gone all her life, gone, yes, the Vulcan way is better because she lives on Vulcan and it's just better to think that way. But then a crisis comes along and she's sick of it.
Yeah.
She's like, wait a minute, you guys are making this crisis worse because of your Vulcan ways. Enough already. Now I'm getting sick of it. Now I'm going to say something.
Which makes total sense.
I think it's good. I think it works.
It is good.
Mm. And her dress is definitely a Phyllis Diller number, but not quite as Dillery as other dresses we have seen. It's not as distracting.
She's got the Phyllis Diller dress with the Alice from Brady Bunch hair.
Oh my God. It's pretty. That's funny.
But it sounds like a Beastie Boys lyric, what you just said.
Yeah, it just kind of does. A little ad rock voice on there would work nicely.
Someone's bringing somebody some meat.
There's an interesting, there's a couple of interesting, bits. I was trying to look up, and I should have done this beforehand, probably. Speaking of which, we get they're all getting ready for the delegates, the ambassadors to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm trying to figure out, is that shot where we were just talking about, where they're kind of doing the walk and talk and they get to and the shuttle comes in. I know the shuttle landing was remastered, but then that shot where they're standing there and the doors open up and you get this really kind of long depth, like this wide open, just kind of everybody, you know, you can see everything. And then there's getting out of the ship and walking up towards our guys there. Was that originally in the unremastered version? I can't imagine that it would be digitally.
No, I think it was there.
Done. It's pretty impressive.
We get that same shot in, I think, maybe not Galileo 7. So, Immunity Syndrome. When Spock goes into the shuttle, I think we have that same exact setup of him, like, going through those doors and walking a pretty far away into the, to get to the shuttle.
And where Bones is like, I love you, as soon as the doors close.
I'll write it in your notebook. You'll find it later.
But in this particular shot, which is, you know, again, some more bravura filmmaking from our man Joseph Hevney, we've got Bones, you know, screen right, kind of running the scene, talking through some stuff. We can, and we have depth of field. We got deep focus, so we can see what's going on in the background. And he hits the button on his conversation, you know, kind of the button on the scene there. And then we push in a little bit nicely into the bay. And it's just really nice little bit of filmmaking.
It really is.
It's very cool.
And this episode is had a surprisingly high extra budget.
Yeah,
like that, the Honor Guard seems to be like 10 people. You have a lot of delegates and a lot of makeup shots. I mean, a lot of makeup work on it. I guess it's because everything's in pre-existing sets.
It's exactly, apparently,
they didn't like skimp on the rest of the budget for that episode, which is nice.
Right.
Yeah, so apparently she was writing it. No, she's like, all right, I'm going to set this all on the ship so we know. We're just, all the money is going to go into, you know, props and costumes, basically. And they even ran out originally Sarek and Amanda were going to beam up, but they didn't have enough money to do a transporter effect.
Wow.
Because if you notice, like, as soon as they fly in on the shuttle, and then Kirk is, you know, in the awkward moment, Kirk's like, oh, Spock, we're here for like 2 days. If you want to beam down and see your parents, and it's like, well, in my head, I was just like, well, why would he just beam down if they just flew in? Like what? Like,
yeah,
but
you know, there's something. Yeah.
I guess it's the regality of being the ambassador that you get to take the shuttle. Right. That was my,
That's what I was thinking, except then I immediately remembered that many ambassadors have beamed up to the ship.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not like we haven't seen ambassadors, but maybe it's a Vulcan thing.
Mm. Could be.
I will fly up on a shuttle only.
Hmm.
Yeah. Maybe they want to,
logical.
Yeah. Yes.
They wanted a view of the ship. They wanted to pull a motion picture and go around the ship for a half hour.
Took them 20 minutes to get there. Yeah.
Well, it felt like that. The landing scene felt like that. It's like, good Lord. Showing us the shuttle. We don't need to see the shuttle that much. It really isn't that good of an effect.
Before anything remastered is, if you look at the upper left-hand side of the frame, there you can see the observation deck to the shuttle landing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there were people in the on the observation deck, which is kind of, which again, a little neat thing that the remastering people seem to care about, and good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that first time I saw
Jawas on like a horse, like it was weird. That I didn't like, but you know.
The first time I saw 2001 in like super high definition, and they come in, the lander comes down into the elevator, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never noticed that every window had people in it, and every, you know, and all the detail that was put into that. It is nice to see action on on the sides of the frames and things when you're supposed to be selling this effect, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a real place. Real people are flying in here, even though it really doesn't look real.
Like the little stormtrooper is watching the Millennium Falcon fly too. It's just like, oh, wow. All right.
Yeah. What
God's name are they doing out there? But I like it.
They're out for a smoke.
Yeah.
Well, in that same shot where we get like the, as Joe, you call them kind of the honor guard, there's all the security guys, you know, lined up, and there's like, you see a bunch of red shirts standing there, and then you hear like, you know, main cabin depressurizing. I'm like, oh no, wait, like something.
Guys, look out.
Be careful.
Again.
And they're all, the entire time they're standing there, they're all like pulling on their,
it's like
they told them, okay, when we say action, you're getting ready to look as nice as you can for the ambassador, and all these extras, of course, they're extras because they go overboard, but they're not exactly subtle actors. They're like, hey, whoa, adjusting their getting ties tidy. That they aren't wearing.
I don't have a tie to straighten. So
one of them takes his shirt off and gives it a scrub.
Those red shirts get no respect. Huh?
Hey.
He's dying.
Also note, same shot, hangar deck. The sign that says hangar deck says hangar with an E. It's the hangar deck. That must be why they're adjusting their clothes, because they just got them off the hangar deck.
Oh, wow. Well, that's funny.
Yeah, that's what they meant. It's the deck where they hang all their clothes.
Right. On the inside of it, it says hangar deck.
That sign is also ripe for like vandalization. I mean, you could very easily make something extremely hilarious out of that sign. With little effort.
Now someone has to.
We're going for banger deck, right?
there's so many ways to go.
That's one of them. Yeah.
Along that same time, like, so then we get that moment where it's just like this tense, awkward. I wrote, my note for this was, I really wish, and I say this with a lot of, you know, Star Wars things and all this other stuff, I would love to see this for the first time not knowing anything. Like, I would love to see this, you know, on TV, essentially.
You probably have.
Yes, I have. But even then, you know, like, I knew probably before, you know, definitely before I had seen this episode, I knew, like, oh, yeah, Spock's parents, Sarek and Amanda. Like, I knew that whole deal. So it's not, it was never this, like, reveal moment. But I would love to be watching this, I'm saying, like, in its original run, essentially, or coming into it fresh, you know, with no knowledge of Star Trek and being like, it's like, oh, why does that guy hate Spock? Like, is he racist? I'm like, oh, no.
It's worse.
No, he doesn't hate Spock for the reasons why everybody else hates Spock.
Right. But then as we kind of did this a little bit, we were talking about it a little bit because of her kind of shifting opinions, but it did really make me wonder, what is the nature of Sarek and Amanda's relationship? It is odd. It is interesting.
It's... there, I don't know. You get those bits of sweetness, you know, between them that make you think that probably it's more of that than they would let on in public, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you wonder, like, it would be rough being married to a Vulcan if you're a human. I think it'd be really rough.
Yeah. Unless there's something about her where she's just like, it just works. She's got that kind of brain or something. She doesn't need a lot of emotional support or something. And I don't know if it's ever been said, but I've always had in my head the idea that it's very strange for a Vulcan to be married to a human, and that there's got to be something about Sarek as a Vulcan that, not that he's less of a Vulcan, but that he might actually love her, maybe, or have something like more like love than maybe other Vulcans have with their wives or something.
Right.
So to like go that extra distance and say, I know she's not for my planet, she's not for my world, but she's the one for me. Damn it. I'm gonna go courting.
Right.
Your bouquet of flowers.
Do we think there's any other Vulcans who are married to humans or any other?
That's what I mean. I don't think I've heard of that.
Yeah, this is the first. Well, it's not the first time we've seen other Vulcans.
Right.
But
right.
We saw T'Pau.
You know, you say it's weird that a Vulcan would be married to one, but this is like the second time we've really delved into Vulcan lore, and it's right there. So it's not weird, I guess.
But the first instance we got was like this huge, like, years of these people's lives have been decided for them.
Yeah.
You know, getting married. You know,
so did they have to go through
seven?
Did T'Pau have to come and. Like, did they go through any of that at all? I think
Sarah called Amanda's dad and said, "Hey, sir, I would like the honor of marrying your."
I like to think her dad's just like a guy. He's like from Cleveland or something.
Yeah. What's Robert that? Young. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He seemed like a good guy. What do you do for a living? Space ambassador, huh?
I
don't know why the guy from Cleveland has the like Bronx accent.
Are you going out with that Surak again? Dad, it's Sarek. Surak is the
dad.
Was he not
men?
He was. Oh, right. Yes. So of course he was. I was like, was he not married before to a Vulcan? And that's Cybok.
Yeah.
I forgot about Cybok.
Oh, that's right.
Forgot about Cybok.
He married to a Vulcan princess, and then she died. Then he became, so it was kind of he lost himself in his work as an ambassador to Earth. And then in being, I forgot about this part. That's the thing. It's his being married to a woman from Earth is a logical enhancement of his role as an ambassador. He will better know Earthlings and Earth customs, and if he is, he will be able to do his job.
But
that way at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what he was explaining.
Like in the within the episode, it feels like she has given herself over to a Vulcan way of life more so than he has softened as a Vulcan, insofar as we know, because we've only really seen one episode with like Vulcan rituals.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think that was ever the arrangement that they would meet in the middle. I think it was more just purely like, okay, I'm going to keep doing my thing. I'm going to understand you better, but I'm not going to be less Vulcan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
but if she has to be more Vulcan.
Yeah.
How much is he understanding?
I don't know. I'm not necessarily, I don't know. Hard for me to do. Well, I was going to say it's hard for me to defend Sarek, but one of my notes is also like, do I agree with Sarek here? Normally it's like, I agree with Spock and everybody else is being a jerk. Like he's the logical, sensible one. Then I'm like, well, do I agree with Sarek here? Like, you know, like as much as we like Spock because we like to see his adventures, but it's like, you know, if he was supposed to be, you know, if he was this kind of gifted guy headed for the Science Academy to make the universe better, and instead he went off to, you know, join the army, essentially, I might be a little bit like, well, I don't know if I wouldn't. I don't know. The idea of not speaking to somebody, it seems very illogical, but in defending Sarek, I don't know. It seems like that neither one is unhappy with it. They're both getting what they want out of it. So that is good.
Yeah, and you wonder if her being more Vulcan isn't really a matter of integrating into the society. Had they lived on Earth, it might have been the other way around.
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. You know, but also apparently Vulcan has like a deep-seated misogyny
I was waiting for one of us to bring that up.
So she just says very offhandedly, yes, of course, he's Vulcan. Therefore, I am like to attend him when he says attend. Yeah. All he has to do is say the word attend. It's really... Yeah, it's a little cringy.
Yeah,
but you know, clearly from the scene where they're sitting there and they're talking of love and they end with the gentle finger touch, you know, you could tell that he softens up for her in certain.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got, there's a tenderness there, but you can't chalk up to any kind of Vulcan thinking.
Right.
And she clearly gets emotional from time to time.
Speaking of the finger touch, that was a neat touch. It was a nice touch that apparently that, you know, they show up on the set and they're like, hey, Lenny, what's what are Vulcans like? What's what do Vulcans do? You know, how can we be more Vulcan? Like, what's and he's like, well, they do a lot of stuff with their hands. Their hands are very important to kind of convey information and feeling. Well, not feeling, I guess, but to communicate kind of with hand gestures and stuff like that. And they're like, all right. And then they went back to like the trailer and they're like, all right, what if we do this? And they came up with a little two-finger touch.
Every once in a while, I'll hold my hand out like that to my wife. And she often
smacks you.
Reciprocates, but usually with a groan or a very patient sigh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of my favorite things, you know, I've said many times that Spock is one of, if not my favorite characters ever. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love the most about Spock is that it's very rare that a performer has so much agency over their own character over such a long period of time.
Yeah.
It's like Spock is really much more Leonard Nimoy's creation than anyone's, you know, and
sure.
Yeah. Half the time when they wrote things, he had contributed somehow to the writing or completely came up with things. You know, I don't think he would do this. He would do this. And now it's like legendary and iconic. And I don't know how many, what are some other characters where that's been the case? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody, but
yeah, there are people who have certainly played the same character and been the only person to play that character for decades. But I don't know about that level of like ground level work that they've put into it to like creating the character beyond just like acting the character,
really adding something.
Yeah,
like really adding something substantial as opposed to just like a little flair here and there. Like I don't think Anthony Daniels did too much, you know, to add to C-3PO other than just being Anthony Daniels. Right. I mean, that was a huge part of it, because just being him and getting the role over the original intention was a big, obviously giant influence on the character. But
it seems like that. I mean, but Anthony Daniels and Ahmed Best both, it's like there was a completely different idea in mind when they were just there to play the body. And then they provided enough of the character that then that became the character.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Daniels, C-3PO was supposed to be the used car salesman kind of, you know, slickster and, you know.
So that's like foundational influence where Nimoy has that foundational influence and then keeps building on it over time. Like big, like, anyway, it's just really cool. I didn't mean to go on about it that long, but
stop talking about Star Trek so much.
Sorry. I love Spock. I love him so much.
So emotional.
Hang on, Deck. I said that already. One of my notes is Talia Shire, which is not at all what Vulcan neck breaking is called, but
Adrian.
But I do again love that you know, little throwaway world building thing where it's just not, you know, well, we need a way for it to be, you know, it wouldn't be a weapon. We need a way for it to be to increase the likelihood that the, you know, that the prime suspect is Sarek.
Yeah.
And so to kind of throw in this, you know, Vulcans have this very kind of efficient, logical way of neck breaking.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing because Spock, they're like, oh, could your dad have done this? And he's like, no, no way. I mean, Vulcans are completely nonviolent. We would never do that. Oh, but what about this way that his neck was broken? Oh, yeah, we would totally do that. That's like the best way of killing him. Right. We love.
Well, if we really had to.
Oh, you know who rules with that? My dad.
Yeah. It's ancient. We don't do it anymore, but we all know how to do it.
It's probably the least violent. You know, we don't see it, but it's probably the least violent way to snap someone's neck is what I'm guessing. It's like, you cannot break a neck more gracefully than this.
Right. And speaking of graceful, that moment that Sarek has in the, when the Tellarite, is that him? Who's like coming at him and he's attacking him And Sarek just does that thing with his hands, just totally gracefully, and the guy goes flying across the room. That's one of my favorite moments of Star Trek, period. I just love that. So, I mean, I can picture Sarek just being like, hey, come here for a second. You got something on your neck. Oh, you're dead.
Oh, well, should we talk about some of the characters, some of the species and whatnot we see in the...
Yeah. Yeah, let me say my son was excited to, he knows Andorians. I forgot from what, but he was like, hey, an Andorian. And then he was like, are Andorians good guys or bad guys? I was like, just watch. Sometimes both.
Well, technically the bad Andorian was an Andorian.
Right.
Oh, that's true.
I tried to explain that to him too. But.
And the good Andorian was just creepy.
See, I feel like a bad Star Trek fan because now I don't remember. They are usually kind of bad, though, aren't they?
I feel like they are. I don't. Do they ever show up again on this Star Trek?
I don't know about this one, but they show up a lot in other ones.
Yeah.
And they especially show up like in, Enterprise, I think.
What's the one with
we
the...
We see an Andorian in the motion picture, don't we?
Yes. I think there's one on the bridge. I think it was, he was in the crew. He was on the bridge or in the...
Oh, so maybe...
And I think you see an Andorian trial sequences in Voyage Home as well.
I think you're right.
There's also the one I forget. It's got one of those ones where the name is, it's like, in your mind shall the prison be, or something like that. And it's the one where the guy where the guys take over the asylum, and they're there's an Andorian in there, one of the prisoners.
Oh yeah,
with Lord Garth.
Yeah,
Lord Garth. I mean, but
the because that one has a big frilly pink boa or something. That's what I always associate with the Andorian uniform.
But I do have that sense that they're a violent race or something. I don't know where I get that, though, from. But there must be like a Next Generation thing or something where the Andorians are very violent. Or look out for that Andorian. You know what they say about Andorians.
I did have a note that in the script, when we open the scene, it'd be like interior Enterprise rec deck or rec room. Two Fez-wearing dwarves wearing pour Kool-Aid out of a bong over colored ice cubes. It's like the weirdest ever. There's so many weird things happening all at once in that opening shot.
I actually think that fake science fiction food thing of picking out some food and then pouring a thing over it is actually kind of cool. It's kind of original and weird, and it's not just like brightly colored food that you kind of recognize.
Or
like
it is, but it's also more than that.
Yeah.
Now that I've seen for whatever reason, all my watchings of Star Trek, I've never noticed the like foam cubes that they eat. And I'm wondering on some level, is that supposed to be a joke? Like, look at these out of towners. They think you put the food in a glass and pour liquor on
They're
it.
Eating well, the parsley.
Well, those are clearly flavor cubes. Those are like, they took Kool-Aid and they froze it and made ice cubes. Because they even make a clinking sound when they put them in the glass. So they're supposed to be ice cubes, I think. Oh. But they probably have flavor that then changes the flavor of the drink you're drinking over time.
When we are recording, I'm going to go upstairs and freeze several flavors of Kool-Aid. And then later on, I'm going to chunk those out and pour red wine over them and see what happens.
Impresses me is that you have Kool-Aid in your house and you're
in multiple flavors of it. Yeah. I was just going to say I'm the exact same thing.
And a grown up, and also it's not like 1979.
It is summertime, Joe,
and he does have a child. Fair enough.
All he has to do is talk about it.
Oh yes, the child
bursting
the
in through the door.
Yeah, right. My house is a shambles because that Kool-Aid guy keeps showing up.
Yeah.
Are the flavor cubes, the aforementioned flavor cubes and like food rocks, and well, there's two things. One, it reminds me of oversized versions of, do you remember Kryptonite gum?
No.
I don't know. It always just make me feel weak.
Yeah. Well, it was, they would sell, I mean, essentially it's like Nerds in size and shape, but they were
Nerds in Superman form. So super Nerds, if you will.
Exactly.
So Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean. Nerds. It was... I have a vague memory of just going to the store and getting Superman gum, and it would come, Kryptonite gum, rather, and it would be, not just green. You could get the other flavors, and kind of, it was brightly colored little nuggets, and that made me think of this a little bit. But also, are the... Are the food cubes color-coded to kind of represent also the different sectors of the Enterprise crew? Because you've got the same colors. You've got the yellow, red, blue, and then some green in there. Mm-hmm. Like, is that the same? Is that like, oh, yeah, or is
you
that just purely
green
like...
on formal occasions.
Right, yeah. Right, or if you're feeling a little bit chubby, you might want to eat a green that day. That's the diet cubes.
Mm. This tastes like engineering.
But what's it's called, like a Hadley or something, if you eat one command and one engineering at the same time or whatever, one of those guys that switched, you know.
Yeah.
Or I guess that's a Worf, right? Mm. Could be a Worf if you eat a unit, a red shirt first and then a yellow, a gold. So, plot wise, we get that. Spock shows up and it was just like, hey, do you want to go see your parents? He's like, these are my parents. And they're like,
And Kirk's like, I knew that because I read your file and I'm your friend.
Right. Yeah.
Gotta go.
Also, we went to Vulcan with you that one time and surely it had to have come up.
Nobody mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah. Invitation got lost.
But, then there's this particular scene in the room, we get a little bit of the flavor of the, the cubes. Yeah. But it's also like it's not really the plot at all. It's the background, the dressing for the plot. It's this thing like, oh yeah, there's a ambassadorial disagreement. This is why everybody's here. And there's some intrigue. It's basically to string it along, so there's another layer of intrigue and another kind of thing driving. I don't know narratively what that kind of thing is called, but adding another layer of this political intrigue behind all this. And I like it because it's, I have to say, it was world building. This is the first time we see a bunch of these aliens.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed that. Well, two things. I was amazed that this is the only Sarek in the original series. I forgot that all these things that are so just like set in stone, you know, like mm-hmm. like prime mythology of Star Trek only happened in like one thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not exactly a deep cut, but lest we forget, Sarek played a Romulan in the first season, then would play a Klingon in the motion picture. I mean, not Sarek, you know, Mark Leonard. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's weird that he would play, almost weird that he would play somebody as important as Spock's father, as he kind of is a utility player up until like 1984.
Right.
Yeah.
And then also I was impressed that I've always been totally creeped out by the Tellarites. I'm always just like, oh, like even, you know, I've mentioned a couple of times kind of the Making of Star Trek book. Even going through that, I'm always just like, I didn't want to look at that page. I'm just kind of like, my son felt the same. He were watching it and he was like, I don't want to hear that guy. And I don't want to look at, like, he didn't like anything about, he was totally turned off by Gav, which I'm sure is short for Gavin. He's a little bit of a.
Well, do they say Gav?
Gav.
I thought I for a long time it was Gav, but then I looked it up and it's G-A-V, so it's Gav. I think
maybe Gav.
Mm. I heard Murray Slaughter.
Yeah.
For those of you playing at home, Gavin McLeod played Murray Slaughter on the Fantastic.
If we're going that way, then I heard Ted Knight talking about Goff versus golf and Caddyshack. Okay.
There, I got that out.
I would like to bring up, I don't know if you're done, Pete.
Well, I mean, just that, I'm glad that it continually is creepy.
Yeah, it's kind of gross. And the fact that his eyes are behind his eye socket. Yeah. So it's a big part of why you
can kind of see his
eyes back there.
Yeah.
It seems like a flaw, but it's cool.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like ugly, but it also has that it's clearly a mask thing to it, so that's weirdly artificial too. It's
kind of odd that they didn't just pop some.
Off-putting.
They should have just popped some lenses. Black. He could have just had black eyes. I did want to bring up. So John Wheeler plays Gov.
Mm-hmm. Right.
John Wheeler from the Columbo episode, The Most Crucial Game.
Stop it, really?
Who plays Valerie Harper's John that has to be excused from the scene when Columbo comes to interrogate the prostitute Valerie Harper.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It's
wow.
awesome.
Wow.
We managed to put both a MTM and a
yep.
yeah.
and a Columbo. That's pretty great.
Right. Yeah. Nice. We were just back to back Valerie Harper vehicles. I like to think that whatever Valerie Harper's in, it's a Valerie Harper vehicle.
Yes. Yes. Right. Her car,
except for Valerie's family.
Yeah.
right. Except when she demands more money and they throw her off the show.
And they just kick her right off her own show. Crazy.
Well, life is a sweet insanity.
Oh, man. I have not seen an episode of that show in a real long time.
Did anybody notice that in that scene where McCoy is talking to Mrs. Surik about the sellet, when they pull back a little bit, you can see what I think are the actors' marks on the floor. Hmm. All these big pieces of tape like around where the people were standing. And I was like, oh, look at that.
Interesting.
Well, pretty sure they're not just like spat out flavor nuggets.
Oh, they could be. Yeah.
The little gold people are just like, this is disgusting. Why would I put this in my drink?
My system can't handle this earth stuff.
Yeah, the mask, the Tellarite mask for a second, apparently that's, I was trying to look for the citation for this, but apparently that's just like, they built it, they put it on him, and like the way it fit his face, that's all it could, you know, it's like, the eye holes are up here, or away from your face and down. And so then, like, not only was it creepy, but he had to, like, go like, tilt his head back and to kind of look. And they're like, oh, all right. So that adds a whole, like, emotional layer to this alien that they look down on people, like, in a weird, like, literal way.
Well, I read, too, that it was so annoying to John Wheeler that he was actually, his performance was actually a little bit more aggressive than it was originally intended to be. It's like, because he was just like having a really bad time on set because of that damn mask.
And then so we get the crux of it is there's a disagreement. They disagree over whether or not a planet should be admitted. There's an argument with between the Tellarite and Sarek, and or a disagreement, a loud disagreement. And then there is, he's murdered. So I was like, you know, it was like, oh, like my son was like, I hate that guy. And I'm like, oh yeah, he's pretty creepy. And then he was dead. I was like, oh, see, he's gone. Somebody else hated him.
TV solves all your problems.
And in the most awkward jump cut I've ever seen.
Yeah.
One of the red shirt in this episode.
I like that red shirt. He's like, I'm not an engineer, but I don't think that dead Tellarites are supposed to be hanging out in the Jeffers too. Yeah. Like I think that's weird. I'm going to call
this. Does this belong here? Somebody?
Yeah.
Somebody?
Touch it in case
I'm new. And then then there's intrigue. Then there's Sarek, as we said, Talia Shire was used to kill him.
Yeah.
Sarek is the prime suspect. Where was he? Oh, he was meditating in private. He has no alibi.
Mm-hmm.
Which
we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then
there,
I think I skipped a lot of note writing because I got involved. I got sucked into the episode.
Yeah. I have a question that's in there somewhere.
Okay.
Okay.
Is emotion, no, excuse me. Is
make you a monster? Yes.
Is embarrassment an emotion? Because Sarek is like, oh, you embarrassed Spock today. And why would he be concerned about... I was thinking about this a lot today for some reason. I kind of maybe answered my own question because I was like, okay, this doesn't seem like... I get that Sarek is concerned about Spock being able to do his job without being, you know, seen in any weird way by people if he's embarrassed in front of them and stuff. And then I thought of like sort of like the Pee Wee Herman doctrine where like something embarrassing can happen, but if you're not bothered by it, you're not embarrassed, but it's still an embarrassing thing. So maybe Sarek is like, you put him in a position where people are going to look at him weird, even if he's not, Spock is not embarrassed. That's still a position where he's looking weird, or people are
it's still
him
weird really. That he would use the word though. I think it is weird.
Yeah, I mean, I spent an afternoon thinking about it, so it's
and
weird.
Nothing. Honestly, nothing is more illogical than embarrassment. If you think about it, it's a natural thing we all feel. But when you every time you think about why you're embarrassed, it never really makes sense. Do you get what I mean? It's like, wait, that doesn't matter that
maybe,
happened. Who cares that it didn't actually hurt you, you know?
Yeah, but maybe it's because it's like based almost entirely on other people's perception of that thing that you might be embarrassed by.
So you would say you you made him susceptible to embarrassment or something. You would flirt, you know, you would add to it. He's like, you could have embarrassed him or you
painted him in a weird way or something.
Or you really created an awkward. There's other ways to put it. Saying you embarrassed him is strange.
But
for a Vulcan,
he's putting it in a way that he's talking to a human.
Yeah.
So he knows that that's what she'll, you know, understand. And also like about his, you know, that I think that's, it's purely it. It'll make it harder for him to do his job efficiently if he's, he throws a little bit of a line in there, something about like, oh yeah, it's hard for him to do his job without the respect of his peers or something like that. So it's purely that, like, oh, you made him look bad in front of the people that he needs to look good in front of in order to do his job efficiently.
Right.
And that's it. It's not like, I don't care about his feelings.
Yeah.
But
Captain, not in front of the Klingons.
Right. Yeah.
It's like if Amanda had stuck a kick me sign on Spock's back and he never knew about it,
right,
he would be, that would be an embarrassing thing for Spock and it would affect him in a way.
Right. He'd be like, how am I supposed to get these readings while everybody's kicking me in the butt?
Yeah. I don't, it's illogical that they're kicking me, but they are. I'm not embarrassed.
Well, during his Vulcan
training,
the other kids called him El Dorco, you know? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. That was mean.
those Spanish
Vulcans.
They weren't
even Spanish.
Yeah. So then we come back to it and we Sarek comes back and is like, oh, hey, how'd all these people get in my room? And they say, hey, you're the prime suspect. And I love that little bits. Like, I love that they're like, hey, Sarek, you know, hey, somebody's dead. There's somebody that you were arguing with who's dead, and their neck was broken with a Vulcan method.
With Talia Shire.
Yeah, with Talia Shire. So where were you just now? And Amanda's like, you surely can't be suggesting. And like Spock and Sarek are both just like, chill out. It's logical. Look, it's like they're both like,
it does make the most sense.
Bring us in. Yeah.
Then he kind of passes out, half passes out. He stumbles for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we learn he's got a health problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn later that he was on the observation deck when he passed out another time, or, you know, had another one of these episodes. So was he, and that's when the Tellarite was killed. So was he just flat out lying here when he says that he was meditating, which I thought was a Vulcan no-no.
I think he was meditating and then had an attack.
I was meditating on the observation deck.
Yes.
Seems like a kind of public place for such a personal, private thing. I don't know.
He theoretically did it late at night.
Maybe. And he put the do not disturb sign on the door. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
I kind of like that they describe it as heart attacks, where it's like, wait a minute, you've had 5 heart attacks in the last 2 months? Yeah. That's insane. You know?
You're a real man.
You really need to lay off the processed meat, Scott.
Yeah, really?
Those flavor cubes, man. Yeah. Eat some of the green ones, Sarah. Just come on.
Broccoli cubes.
I eat my bacon in cube form.
But then it becomes dire. Does he get, I forgot, is there another element? Do we go straight from this discussion of it straight to the sick bay, or is there an intermediary thing? Is there another thing where there's another argument or another
right there?
Right? There's not another thing where he's like, I'll be fine. And then like Tellarite is like, listen, you. And he's like, oh my God, my heart. Like, there's just the one.
I think so. Yeah. And then he tells us about other ones that we didn't see.
Mm-hmm. And we learn that it doesn't, and we can't retroactively blame this. We have to blame what came later. But the idea of doing surgery, specifically open heart surgery, seems like something that they've gone way beyond. McCoy seems like he would be making fun of this kind of treatment.
Yeah.
And he has
Damn
made fun
middle
of this
ages.
Kind of, like, what are they going to do?
Well,
cut him open?
It sounds as though they have gotten beyond it.
Right.
You know, they talk about, but it's, the situation is particularly complex and they have to, even though we don't want to, I think we're going to have to do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's really dangerous and we need lots of blood.
Right.
Which is interesting.
That's another weird thing. It's like, why? It seems like they're reliant on 20th century Earth things that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. It's, you know, it's just for the plot to make it more interesting. And it is interesting. I'm not saying like, wait a minute, but it is a little bit like, All right.
You'd think that they would have a pill to regenerate a heart, too.
Yeah. This isn't a kidney version of those.
Come on, come on. It's not a kidney. It's a heart. You know, we got to be sensible here. True. I do like that we find out that, yes, Vulcans do have green blood. It's not just a slur that McCoy is throwing around. It's actually a statement of fact.
It actually looks like wheatgrass juice. Probably it's like really green.
Yeah, they're giving him some healthy stuff, too.
That would be very expensive for just a prop. I feel like they wouldn't use wheatgrass juice for just that scene, but I do love that. I do love this whole surgery, the shot, the way the shot's set up, and they put that green light on McCoy's face. It's really fantastic.
Well, then I had a question about that. So as we're moving ahead a little bit, because it goes back and forth between then they're like, hey, the only thing that, you know, was going to save him was we need Vulcan blood. And Spock's like, I got Vulcan blood. And
you don't say.
They're going to do it's weird that they can't just, Spock can't just give blood. He's got to be there kind of supplying it live.
Yeah, that seems very 19th century or something.
But again, I for the sake of the plot, you know, and so I'll forgive a lot for the sake of the plot. I'll forgive a lot for the sake of the plot.
That was sweet.
Then throw in that Kirk gets stabbed by the Andorian, quote unquote Andorian.
But fortunately manages to defeat him by doing that well-known martial arts wrestling move where you more or less do Hulk Hogan's atomic leg drop on him.
Yeah. He throws his butt at him, basically.
Yeah, but first he gives him like a flying butt face. Yeah. I don't know what. There has to be some wrestler that has something like that. Right?
Kirk has the best moves, man. He's got so many of them, too.
And Why did you do that?
You know he's in the gym in those red sweatpants practicing them all the time.
I'm going to do some tumbles.
some butt faces.
Yeah.
It's like he's got one of those like heavy bags, but it's shaped like a person.
Yeah.
And he jumps out. I'm picturing like a Bozo bop bag, and he keeps jumping up and whacking it with his butt. He's like, butt first. Because knocks down.
I'm leaving
and comes
here
back
till
up.
I can get him in the face with my butt.
What was that guy's name? The guy that Charlie X disappeared? Maybe that's what he's doing with him when he's in the gym wearing his just red Star Trek pants. All right, Larry, stand back up again. I'm going to see if I can hit you in the butt. Okay, Captain.
I yearn for when I was a lizard or whatever.
Then Spock is just like, hey, I can't. And I questioned a couple of times again, but this is interesting plot stuff. It's not a plot hole. It's an interesting kind of interesting choices of like, okay, Spock's main concern is, you know, ship out of danger. He's responsible for the ship, but also like the ship's mission. Would not keeping the ambassador alive be paramount to the success of the mission? Wouldn't, in order for the mission of the ship is to get the ambassadors safely to so they can decide this. And if one of them dies on the way, wouldn't that make matters worse? Wouldn't that be a failure, essentially?
Yes.
I guess, though, he is fearing, and Sarek would say the same thing, that yes, you might save one ambassador, but by doing that and not keeping control of the ship, you know, you got a murder on the loose, many worse things could happen, and the whole thing could go down the tubes.
Except then there's the added weirdness of the arrogance that Scotty couldn't do this.
I could do this. I had that in all caps. Couldn't Scotty do this?
Yeah, of course he could. This is one of those weird points where Spock, the Vulcan, who has no ego to bruise, has actually got a big ego and is very arrogant.
Right.
This is ridiculous to think that he should let his dad die because only he can control. Well, if you're that great a captain that you should be the captain of a ship. Yeah. Like if you're that great, why are you the second officer or the first officer? So to me, it was kind of that. This is the one part of the episode that really stretches it for me. I'm like, and I never really cared before preparing for this episode, but watching it now, I'm like, oh, this isn't right.
Right.
I'd push back just a bit because it's not so much that Scotty couldn't do it, but it's like, Spock is second in command, and the ship is in a crisis mode. You cannot, like, he can't relinquish to, for lack of a better term, his subordinate for a personal reason. Like, he does have
It's definitely not a personal reason.
It's not only a personal reason, but it is very personal.
It's part of the mission, just as Pete laid out. It's a big part. It's the whole mission.
I also
part of the mission was not to go into surgery.
Right.
No, part of the mission is to get Sarek to this conference.
Yeah.
It's, well, it's to more, get all and they've left Scotty in charge.
I think there's a real concern that if he spends all his time trying to save Sarek, he might be jeopardizing many other important ambassadors.
But again, Scotty has been in the chair during many a crisis already.
Right. I love that.
It's not as if he's not capable of, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of people. If you, if you're this desperate that you can't lose, I mean, why do Kirk and Spock ever go on an away mission together then? Yeah. If it's that important, right. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
But I mean, but again, you know, what we're not saying is part of the reason that he's making this decision is it's not fully just logical. And, you know, I feel like if this dying ambassador was anybody other than his dad, he might be like, oh, yeah, I'll give him a transfusion, whatever. I'll take a nap instead of, you know, turn the ship over to Scotty and I'll read a book.
I think that definitely is part of it, that there's a little bit of not, you know, not ego, but that, like, you know, what is it they say, like 17 years or something of resentment? And like, well, hey, yeah, I'd love to help, but I got to, you know. I gotta
Wow, fly that's pretty resentful.
Yeah,
well, it's that.
You're gonna let
also,
your dad die?
It's not. It's that resentment, but it's also, he says, I think more than once, like, Sarek would agree with me that this, my dad, who's dying, would think I was stupid if I tried to save him. And maybe he's had enough of that. Like, maybe there's, I feel like there's some dad stuff there where he's like,
sure,
I don't want to hear about it, that I jeopardized everybody just to save his life. I, you know, come on.
And extra level of that.
Son.
He's like, wait a minute, I can do the most logical Sarek thing and also, like, as a result, get back at him at the same time.
His own logic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of that. And I think, you know, he totally wouldn't admit that and it's not surface, but I think there's totally some of that going on in, you know, the most important thing to Spock is not only, you know, well, not the most important thing now, but like the core of his character is, you know, that kind of feeling not really fully in either world and trying really hard to be Vulcan. And for his dad, the Vulcan part of him, to be rejecting him for 17 years, you know, is at the core. He's got serious issues with that. So that it, I would expect him to be kind of lashing out a little bit, but
I mean, that whole argument between him and Amanda around this time of the episode is awesome, because it's really clear. It's one of those times where you're like, wow, they are both making absolute sense and they're saying totally different things and they're totally contradictory, but they both make sense.
That between Spock and Amanda, you mean, when about, and
she's like, he's your father. You're the only person here who can save him. If you let him die, I'm going to hate your guts. I'm going to slap you anyway.
Right.
And Spock is like, I can't, this is my job, you know, and dad agrees with me.
And that
I still don't buy all that stuff, to be honest. I still don't think it makes sense.
It works enough me to not think that it's dumb.
Like, I still think if you're a Vulcan, you're going to sit down and you're going to go, okay, mission is get all these ambassadors to this thing. Sarek has been specified as one of the most important ambassadors, that other people listen to him. So he's very important. He must live and get there to complete mission. Therefore, I must lay down and give him my blood. I don't see how all the other stuff then becomes flawed logic and emotion, which is fine for the story. I'm not disagreeing with it on a dramatic level. I'm saying it gets a little touchy. And then I almost think that it would have made more sense from a writing standpoint for her to argue more logically to him than to say, he's your father. Say more like, she should have laid it out the way I just did.
Right.
And she should know that that's how you do this, because she deals with Vulcan men all the time.
Right.
But to me, it's all a little bit, it's a little muddy and it's a little frustrating. And it's one of those points where I'm like, I love Spock so much, but sometimes he really pisses me off because this is ridiculous. This is clearly ego. And then his father, my father would agree with me. It sounds like he would agree with me because he's also just as stubborn and arrogant as I am, and he won't accept help and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, this is not the perfect Vulcan logic that we're taught, we're meant to believe, which again makes good drama, but it's a little bit frustrating and maybe could have been a little tighter, but still. Anyway, I'm not really disagreeing with you guys exactly, I guess, but but at the same time, I'm like, they're wrong. They're both wrong.
We're having a vibrant debate.
What the I think that all feeds into I don't see those as flaws at all. I think that's wrinkles that I like. And I also think that Amanda's conversation in particular, and Amanda's part of it, is the most. Top 10 is broad because they don't really do it well, but is this on my list, I think, of like top genuine emotion scenes in Star Trek in the original series. Like, I feel like there's a lot of melodrama. There's a lot of kind of, you know, like, oh, you're supposed to be, you know, like, oh, but I love her, that kind of a thing, you know, but there's not, there's doesn't seem to be that much genuine emotion that resonates, and I feel like this is one that you know, and also, you know, it's playing to the audience. It's like, hey, what if I write a scene where Spock gets we talk about how Spock used to get made fun of as a kid,
right?
And all the audience, you know, the second middle of the second season Star Trek nerds are like, yeah, me too.
Well, it's funny because you get that kind of like that tidbit that McCoy finds so tantalizing about the Sellet. So you get that kind of thing. But then here, like, her little story about, like, you know, when you're 5 years old and you're all stiff-lipped and all the kids are being jerks to you and stuff, that's like, oh my God, Spock had a really hard time.
Yeah.
I love that guy. I hope
you're
right.
It's great kind of exposition added to, you know, like, again, world building, kind of figuring out what Spock's all about.
Yeah.
And of course, other people apparently liked these things a lot too, because the Sellet appears in the animated series, and the bullying scene appears in the Kelvin Star Trek. Yeah.
Boy, did she slap him too, by the way. That's like, there's nothing melodramatic about that slap. That's full on.
Has anybody ever slapped you while you were talking to, like, you were in an argument or any kind of emotional, and somebody just, because it's so damn common on television and movies in our lives. How many times have we seen, and sometimes they'll slap them like three times, you know, like.
Did slaps develop on TV because you couldn't say the F word and stuff? Like in real life, somebody says, F you, but like they can't do it, so you slap them?
So just slap them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just always been a visual, very demonstrative thing. It shows what they're, you know, it gets you.
Right.
They've had enough, so much to the point that they'll slap you right in the face.
I think, I mean, slapping just used to be more common, right? Is it not?
I assume it was.
Yeah. With white gloves and stuff?
Because TV told me it was.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like getting a drink thrown in your face used to be more common, too. And now it doesn't happen as much. Does happen.
I've watched enough TV to be disappointed that I don't think I've been slapped or had a drink thrown in my face. I feel like I haven't lived.
Look, I've probably
been slapped. I don't think I've had the drink thrown in my face.
Okay.
I was a teenager, my mom did slap me one time.
Oh, wow.
And I probably deserved it many more times than that one time. That's why my mom is the most mild, like, sweet lady. But I remember standing over her. I had grown taller than her, and I was being a jerk. And I don't know what I said, but she just slapped me right in the face. It's the only time, though.
Wow.
Thankfully, I've never had, like, a woman. I've never done anything to anger anyone I was dating or anything to be slapped.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It just seems so fake. But at the same time, I wonder if people have that experience. You know, I've had that one experience, but they would lead you to believe that it's much more common than it is.
I think Radke's been both slapped and had a drink thrown in his face.
Okay.
So, that tracks.
At the same time?
We'll have to. I'll
I can't remember. I don't think anybody's ever thrown a drink on me either. But I used to get drunk a lot, so I might not remember.
Fighting by Queensberry rules is the other thing you'll see a lot in TV.
Right.
You know, in movies. Yeah. Like, how dare you, sir? And
I call you out.
Actually, old-timey boxing.
Doesn't that just mean, basically, when you're fighting and you say that, it just means, don't kick me in the balls, please.
Yeah, right.
That's
basically
what you're saying.
There's also the... let's see, there's a couple of just... in the Bones' little operation station there. There's one or two shots where it's like, is he... Does he is he welding Sarek? Like, what? Does he really not know anything about Vulcan anatomy? Because there's a couple of shots where he's like looking down and he looks up and then you see like a puff of smoke. So either,
he's soldering something.
Yeah.
He's a horrible surgeon.
Either that's something to do with maybe it's like supposed to be like a, you know, cauterizing or something like that. Or is that like, was he smoking between takes? Was there an ashtray there where he's just kind of like, there's, are we rolling? Yeah, hang on.
60s doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now my notes are just kind of piecemeal because it was like I got through the part of the episode where I was like, ooh, and I was like, oh, I should be taking notes. So my notes are just Italian lady ensign. Anybody notice her?
Oh, wow.
No.
There's
she tossing dough?
Yeah. there's just an ensign that I was like, hey, that looks like an Italian, like a middle-aged Italian lady.
Good just, for her. Soup is good food.
Let me see if I can figure out who she is. Let's see. Oh, that was Jeannie Malone as the purple-skinned alien, by the way. Jeannie Malone, we previously
saw. The old Italian name Malone.
Yeah.
No, the purple-skinned alien who's walking around behind all the ambassadors and stuff. We've seen her in a million different... She's like a total, like, you know, any given, like, what do we need? All right, get Malone out here. She's... We saw her. She was one of the Roman slaves in Brennan Circuses. She's been an officer. She's
been a gentleman.
Mm-hmm. She was one of the feeders of Val. She's one of the inmates of the Tantalus colony. Like she's been everything, and she will continue to be. Let's see what I'm trying to call it up to see what this guy's what this lady's name, unknown actor. No. Cross-dress alien 1 and 2. That's not
sure.
Her.
Oh. Did anybody notice Alex Karras at the helm?
Yes.
Did you really?
Yeah. Mustacheless Alex Karras. Yeah.
Yeah. A little leaner.
But I didn't notice him in any kind of a close-up or anything. Where did he come from? Because definitely Chekhov was at navigation, right? Mm-hmm. He was at navigation, is what you're talking about. The guy that was at
The guy navigation. Takes his place when Chekhov moves over to.
So that's the first time you see him, and then you see him in those wide shots, and he just does a little bit of shaky acting, you know, the
right.
But yeah, he did have a little care, like young Karras.
Yeah.
Maybe he was still in the NFL era, Karras.
Maybe.
I'm trying to figure out who that. Looking at the list of names, you know, uncredited co-stars, I'm just like, am I looking at the right episode? Because I can't find any of them, really.
It's too many extras. They couldn't, the system.
But
it's overloading the system.
But there's a handful of guys.
Things like that with Scottish accent.
I can't find the name. Can't find the character name or the actor name for the Italian lady ensign. My next note is carpeted
Sophia
brig.
Mamma mia.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just say mama something.
Carpeted brig.
Oh yeah.
Which I've never noticed before because I don't know if we've ever had a close up shot like that before. But when when the fake Andorian, he falls on the ground and breaks his fake antenna, which is actually a transmitter. So it's a real antenna. It's just not a...
right, not the one you thought it was.
Yeah.
God, that was lucky that he fell on that particular antenna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that they would have just given him a little scan at some point. Oh, I'm assuming they would have given him a scan before.
They should have already done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they should have done that immediately upon arrest. They should scan these people.
Right.
The guy should have hidden the thing in a less likely piece to break off of his head. You know, like hide it in your
like a
pocket.
Tooth or something.
A tooth,
or
just
swallow it
straight up your nose. And
up
why is
your nose with
Dick
a Orion transmitter?
I wanted that guy to be Dick York, and he wasn't. That Andorian, the fake one.
Yeah, he had that look to him, and I looked him up on IMDb, and he's been in everything that's ever been made ever.
Okay,
because like I knew I saw him before, and Dick York. And also Dick Sargent was kind of my go-to, but he is neither actor. William O'Connell is the name.
I'm sure I've seen him around.
That sounds like one of those guys.
Oh, yeah, he was one of like Clint Eastwood's regulars.
Oh, okay.
You know, he's in Outlaw Josie Wales. He's in...
Gosh.
You know, he's in Paint Your Wagon. He's in High Plains Drifter.
Heh.
Hmm.
Yeah. I've probably
and,
seen him.
A bunch of, and like, again, every television show you've ever heard of.
Hey, O'Connell. Need you again.
No,
I'm making
no.
two movies this year. Saddle I need you up. Both of them.
No Columbos for that guy?
Nope. Mm. Nope.
Seems impossible, but okay.
Yeah, prime...
But hey, O'Connell.
Batman, but we got 66
don't
Batman.
Do that Columbo show. I assume Eastwood just controls his life.
Yeah.
Speaking of this guy, that guy's name is Thelev. Mm-hmm. Right? The fake. He's been surgically altered. He's an Orion who's been surgically altered to pose as an Andorian, which then Orions are green, right? So he got like a little like something to turn him from green to blue, which is neat.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Soul Man, except less racist.
Right, yeah. He took some kind of pill. Was it a pill in Soul Man? I forgot what it was.
I think it was.
Yes, it was a tanning pill that basically he ODs on.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
But he was revealed to be a fake. He was revealed to be a spy. I like that his reveal didn't lead to them blowing up the other ship. It's like, oh, like we found out he's a spy. Also, let me use my cunning. And then, mm-hmm. you know, Kirk essentially like if Spock hadn't protested, if Spock was just like, yeah, you're right, let's let Scotty do this, while Kirk's, did we talk about that? Kirk got stabbed, so he was in the sick bay.
Yeah.
If Spock was just like, you're right, Mr. Scott can handle this, let me go down and do the blood. Yeah. And then this thing that this ship is doing, this maneuver that Kirk uses to kind of free themselves to get the better of this alien ship might not have been something that Scotty came up with or Spock for that matter. So really, if Spock had just relented and be like, yeah, you're right, let's do it, like they might have been in deeper trouble.
That's possible. I think Scotty might get the award for regular cast member who's not in the episode but is talked about the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Where's Poochie?
Right.
Yeah,
it's okay
tell
if
you,
I'm not in this, as long as you talk about me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I got this visceral reaction to, you know, Kirk, his heart clearly beat. He needs to be laying down, but he gets it together enough to go up there and sort of dupe Spock into leaving.
Yeah.
And you know, he's like, oh, as soon as he leaves, as soon as Scotty gets here,
yeah,
I can go lay down. And it felt like that feeling to me. I was like, it's like when you're really, really, really tired and it's time to go to bed.
Yeah.
And then you're just about to bed and you hear your kid go, Daddy, hey, Daddy. And you're like literally have given into sleep already as you're standing. Just before. And you can tell when the ship, you know, when it's like, sir, the ship is doing, and he's just like, oh, God. Okay, I'll stay here.
Right. Sir, you didn't post the episode for tomorrow. Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
There's one of them. Yeah. You're like already completely given into the idea of sleep when you realize you have to do something. Hate that feeling.
Mm. Yeah. I got to say, that's a sincerely cool and heroic moment for Kirk. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that he goes up there to fake out Spock, and I love that the second he sees that there's trouble, he's like, forget bringing Scotty up here. He's not even on the show. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to take care of business because I'm the captain.
We can't afford him this episode. I'm going to have to do this.
Right. He's home. He's probably asleep right now. He's not even here.
We got the monkey pigmen or we got Jim. Which do you want?
Wait, I'm sure it's not a one-to-one. It's like, yeah, you can have all of them. We could paint these little people gold or you could get Jimmy Doohan up here. What do you want?
This is clear.
So that in doing so, he disables the other ship. The ship self-destructs. Andorian, the Orion in disguise is just like, oh, yeah, I, too, self-destruct. Like, and he's like,
gross.
Yeah, I ate a poison.
I wanted him to explode so bad.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Like John Cassavetes in The Fury.
Yeah.
Like five different angles.
Yeah, over and over and over again. Slow motion. John Cassavetes from Colombo. Okay.
Yes.
But I love that I seem to have miscalculated our fine last words. I like that. I'm going to add that to my my potential, like, if I'm aware of it, if when I'm dying, I'm like, that would be a great final, like, your last words. But like, I seem to have miscalculated, and then just boom.
You guarantee it if you just have it put on your gravestone.
I guess.
Peter Bonavita, I seem to have miscalculated.
That's pretty awesome.
And nobody will quite know what you mean, but
we will. If possible, I think I would like the headstone then to be kind of like offset from the grave itself. So it's like, you know, it's like things are a little off, and I'm like, oh, it's a real
step there. That's the grave.
Yeah, measure twice, cut once, kind of a thing.
Yeah, or just don't quite finish the word miscalculated. Like, have that cut off in mid-word.
Miscalculate.
Right. It's going to be in a smaller font.
Yeah.
And then we kind of get out of ship out of danger, and then they Kirk runs down and sees, I'm assuming that's, you know, adrenaline kicked in and that helped him kind of not be as, you know, he seemed pretty rickety as soon as, you know, he was waiting for them to get in the elevator to leave, but then as soon as the adrenaline kicked in, then he was like, all right, I got to do this. And then as soon as that faded, I'm surprised he didn't just collapse right on the bridge right there. But then he makes it down to sick bay and sees, he's like, all right, how did it go? And they're all just like, thumbs up, doing great. Like, you know, everything's fine. And it turns into a nice little just kind of comedy moment of like humans. Aren't humans crazy? which did make me want to see, like, I don't know, if this was a modern telling of this story, I would kind of like maybe a Sarek and Amanda sitcom to be spun out of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I would Paramount Plus show with Sarek and Amanda sitcom, kind of like a WandaVision, but without the other plot parts. Just leave it with being a sitcom thing. Just leave it in a standard. Like
it really would be a lot like WandaVision, wouldn't it?
Right, but don't involve all the kind of the big universe intrigue stuff. Just make it strictly, keep it strictly a throwback kind of sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
I
see it.
I mean, I think the plot would have to be that they had to move back to Earth. Mm. You know, he had to become ambassador. So it's Sarek on Earth would be the comedy, the fish out of water.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that would be good.
And I guess you could do both. You could once you tire of that, once you wear that out, then it could be a big season thing where they move to Vulcan or they have to go to a star base or something like that. You know, change up the scenery. But yeah, at first it's totally just Sarek and Amanda just kind of in do they have a house? Do they have an apartment? Who knows?
Wouldn't Sarek, in reality, if you were a person of pure logic living on Earth, wouldn't you be kind of a Larry David that doesn't get excited? Like, people would be mad at you a lot because you would be so cold to their feelings all the time.
Yeah.
So his responses in social situations would always be off-putting to people.
Yeah.
And she would always have to be trying to fix it. And that would be pretty funny.
But he might also have like the perfect lawn and everything very clean and angular and tidy. Mm-hmm.
I think it would have to be like a small neighborhood, like a suburban neighborhood or something like that. And he doesn't go outside much because he spends his time inside writing. Maybe he's taking a brief respite from active ambassador work to write his memoir or a treatise on something. And so he's at home and he's the writer and she goes out and is doing stuff and having fun. And
sounds pretty good.
And she gets along with all the people in the neighborhood, but then they're all just like, your husband's so weird.
You know what, as we're talking about this, like, oh, this is a crazy idea, then I think about it, surely Paramount is trying to expand upon the Star Trek universe the same way Marvel has. This is actually something that could happen.
They're like, tossing a bunch of Star Trek shows up there. They'll get to
they're making comedic animated shows, they're doing all kinds of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they did a throwback sitcom in Star Trek universe. Nothing surprises
would totally
me
watch
anymore
it.
Me too.
Speaking of watching it, we watched this episode.
We sure
nice.
Did.
That was a smooth one.
What a segue.
One more note, no Idik. So hadn't been thought up as a marketing tool yet, even though it's our second episode in a row with formal wear.
He wasn't trying to honor anybody this time.
Right. Well, do you think he thought about it and then he was like, I don't want to go overboard, like with Vulcan is coming. I don't want to be like he was kind of trying to. Was he trying to be cool with when Dr. Pulaski beamed up, and or is he trying not to be as cool? He's trying to, like, you know, be blend in a little bit and just be kind of background, or is he trying to just be like as formal as possible?
I think that he expects his dad to scoff at whatever he does.
So right.
Mm-hmm. Going the extra mile of wearing the itik would just be like, why am I inviting this? I'm just gonna leave this on my
sir. Sir could be like, oh, I see you're wearing your itik.
Oh, you remembered your itik.
Oh yeah. Whoa. Yeah.
What's that?
I used to wear that sometimes, right. You know, like withering remarks.
Those were last summer.
Yeah, we used to think those were cool when I was young too.
You know, those are popular at the Science Academy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
don't see them much around Starfleet.
Curious.
Looks good. Do these guys make fun of you, call you names for wearing it? You know?
Yeah.
I think this falls squarely because the crux of the episode is decision making and kind of interpersonal choices. I think it has to be a command episode. Command not only in the sense of commanding the ship, but command in the sense of, you know, choosing your path and being in command of your own choices, and your choices affect others. So even though it's Spock centric and Bone centric, I think it's firmly a command episode.
Makes sense.
Because everything else is just dressing around the main options. So the options, interpersonal interactions and choices are the meat of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Doing what is right. How did we feel about it? What are we going to give this? Is it another Friday's Child where it's like you got the right ingredients, but they didn't really come together to make a good sauce there?
I will say that I went into this knowing that I liked this episode and that it was cool and that it was kind of fine and solid. It has Sarek in it and everything. But by the time I was done, I was like, why would I not give this an A+? It is really, really solid Star Trek across the board. I like everybody in it. They're all prime. Like, as you know, as Pete said, it's got like one of the most authentic and sincerely emotional scenes. It's got fantastic Spock, excellent Bones, even excellent Kirk. Hits a guy in the face with his butt.
But Kirk,
I'm going to go ahead and give this an A+. There's nothing that I can come up with to knock this down. I wasn't frustrated the way John was with the with Spock's logic. I thought it actually worked perfectly enough. I mean, you can poke holes in it, but it absolutely works the way it needs to. And I love this. It's excellent. A+.
All right.
Yeah, I'll just say that's the only thing that keeps me from giving it an A+. I give it an A.
I just get
a little frustrated at that part, and I think it could have been tightened up from a character standpoint a little bit. But it's not really. I mean, it makes the dramatic engine keep running. So, and I love everything else about this episode. I love Amanda. I love Sarek. I love Vulcans in general.
Yeah.
I love that we learn things about Spock. I love Bones. And so Bones is kind of, like you said, like kind of the undercover all-star of this episode. I like that.
Especially that normally, you know, eye roll kind of, kind of ending.
Do weep.
Yeah, do weep. I was going more into Gilligan's Island incidental music there. Sorry.
I think qualifies as do weep. That is my generic term for the let's go with a laugh ending.
Yeah.
Jane Wyatt...
was I didn't roll my eyes hard at that. That was kind of genuine, and I kind of chuckled a little bit at it, where it's just like, because they did give him this moment of like not only Bones but like DeForest Kelly too, being like finally I get the last word, and he should have just like looked at the camera and given like frozen on him, given like a Norman Fellow.
He pretty much does
yeah.
And it is always funny to me when somebody says shut up is very funny to me. And it's always very like, especially the way he delivers it, just angry and short and sharp, shut up.
And he can tell everybody in the sick bay to shut up, because that's his
sick bay. His domain.
But I love that we get Jane Wyatt cocking her head and smiling and then just touching Sarek's fingers in that moment. Oh, but there's that part when Bones says, I finally got the last word, and they're about, it's like holds for a minute, and there's like a, could be a beat in there, kind of take it as long as you can and just have Spock say, no, you didn't. And then cut away. Something like that. But
there's a fan edit out there.
It's hard for me not to think that somebody, when somebody says I got the last word, you got to say something. Yeah. You can't let them say that.
A loser.
Sure you did. Hey, good job. You did. You're right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's there's nothing. I concur with Tom, and I can't. There's nothing really that takes it away from me. I was entertained the whole time. Everybody's doing a good Star Trek thing. Everybody's true to their characters. There's a little. I think those little quibbles are. You know, I think there are wrinkles there to be explored and not faults. Like mm-hmm. I think, so I concur. I would say it's an A+ one. Cause I same deal. I remember liking this one, but I hadn't seen it in a long time. The Tellarites creep me out. And I thought maybe it was a little bit like, oh, am I going to not like this one because of that? Like, are there long, boring scenes of this? And I do want to note, interestingly, like, the, whole, like, well, all the diplomats sitting around talking, and I was like, oh, what is this, Babylon 5? I was like, wait a minute, Babylon 5. Oh, Journey to wait a minute.
Babylon 5?
Yeah. Hold the mayo. but yeah, I fully enjoyed it. I could watch a whole, if this was just what Star Trek was all the time, I could watch more of that. If it was just kind of, you know, which essentially is a little bit of what, you know, what Babylon 5 is like, but doesn't always hit in the same way. But yeah, I would also say A+.
I'm going for an A for two reasons. Number one, there was a little bit of, if not awkward direction, awkward editing. Like the two jump cuts, one where you discover the Telluride, and the other where it's a jump cut just to like an Andorian and Kirk wrestling each other. Mm-hmm. That both times was like, wait a minute, did I miss something? Like did my Netflix jump or something like that?
Feels like they were out of time.
Yeah.
We got to cut something somewhere. So they cut the Dorian sneaking up on Kirk or whatever.
Yeah. Instead of the red shirts adjusting their collars.
Yeah, except for that. Well, you got to have that.
Yeah. Right.
How would you know that they were trying to look nice?
And what was my secondary reason? I had two reasons. And the awkward ending is one. Oh, you know what? It's because I didn't like the, I finally got the last word. I found that to be just a little bit.
Aww.
Too much.
Hmm.
Not too much. Bones. And oh, actually, no, I got a better second reason. I'll let him have his last word.
All right.
It is a good it is a great episode of Star Trek, but it is a great episode of Star Trek if you're already a Star Trek fan.
Yes.
Okay. Like, if you watch that episode of Star Trek, you kind of have to know what the relations are between people.
Yeah, I mean, it might not be on your, even though it's making our A list, it might not be on your mixtape for the newbie, like the top 10 of like.
It might be, but it wouldn't be the first. You wouldn't lead with that, It's not, not, you know, side A, track one.
Right.
Ease him into the Vulcans a little bit, then hit him with this.
Where, like, something like the Doomsday Machine or City on the Edge of Forever for me are just like, these are perfect hours of television. So, yeah, A, solid A for me.
A. And that makes it an Enterprise A episode. A is across the board. Look at that. Well, speaking of A's, that's the last J, because it's the only J.
Smooth.
Yeah. Let's go out the leave J with the A. Like, let me tell you, if we go highest average score per letter, I think J is probably going to take it.
Oh, it could be. This is J's year.
We'll see. Mm-hmm.
But coming up, we've got two L's. We skip K altogether. No K's. No. They're, I wonder if let me. Well, I don't want to drag it out because I was going to go look in the alternate titles section of Memory Alpha and see if there were any proposed K's. We could have had, you know, Killing Me Softly or something like that, but instead
the kill element, like that.
Kill
that
no
one.
I.
Yeah. Right. Here's an exciting one that I always manage to mangle the title a little bit, but I always remember which one it is, even though it's not directly on the nose descriptive title. Let That Be Your Last Battlefield.
Mm,
it's a okay. Season 3 winner. Winner, potentially. We'll find out.
Yeah.
In the meantime, before we get to that, let's go to social media. Let's go to Twitter, ABCDTOS. Let's go to Facebook, the ABCDTOS Briefing Room. Let's go to abcdtos.com/merch, which should get you to our TeePublic page, which has a handful of designs up there. We got the I drink pretty frequently out of my Tantalus penal colony mug. And we just put up we got the Sex Fear shirt up there. We got the Murasaki 327
oh, yeah.
Shirt. We got a lot of good designs up there. Spock, Are We Not Men? We Are Devo, Spock. I think it's still up there. It's good stuff all around. And hey, go to our Patreon, abcdtos.com/Patreon, and you'll get bonus episodes roughly monthly, but we're thinking about throwing some more stuff in there. And as we said, we're going to take a little summer break after the L's. So during that break, we'll just be dropping a couple of things on Patreon instead of on the main feed. So if you want to support the show, that's where you'll get our content in the meantime. And then we will be back with Let That Be Your Last Battlefield in a week here on ABCDTOS. Yoo-hoo!
Shut up.